London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 5, The Frozen World.
Tom Lambert here again. A strange cylinder buried beneath a northern beach. Then another, glowing in the depths of a Welsh coal mine. And now we knew there were more. Scattered over England and Europe, perhaps all over the globe. Freezing everything that came near them and causing solid matter to vanish from the face of the earth. Possibly even transmitting it across the vastnesses of space. In the 4th recording, you heard how Elizabeth returned alone to the laboratory. How the cylinder began to operate with a new intensity. Now, we were very near to understanding the whole unbelievable truth. Here is the 5th recording.
If I had known that night the terrible risk Elizabeth had taken, that I was a mile away, sitting by my study fire with McLaren. Clifford knew, though. He could see the writhing mist, the white fur of frost smothering everything, the telephone swinging mutely on its cord, but not Elizabeth Ryder.
Liz! Liz, are you in there? Liz, for heaven's sake, can you hear me? Got to get these doors open.
Clifford moved across the passage and hurled himself bodily at the doors. They burst in, sending something rasping across the floor, a filing cabinet that had toppled across them on the inside. Dreadful, paralyzing cold closed about him. This was nothing we had seen before. The whole laboratory was an arctic landscape. The apparatus, the benches, no more than humped shapes beneath the coating of ice. Grotesque, glittering icebergs. The densolite cubicle had become a nightmare refrigerator. A hollow case of ice containing the only thing unchanged, the rod, its green flickering growing duller each second. Clifford tottered and fell heavily. The floor itself was a gleaming sheet of ice. He dragged himself up, and then he gasped with relief.
Liz!
Oh, Kevin, I thought maybe you... Oh, no.
Liz. Hidden from the doors, Elizabeth was lying between the benches, and she was very still. Her clothing, her hair were white with frost. Her face was white and pinched, and her eyes were closed. Clifford crawled to her side, tried to lift her, but her coat, stiff as a board, was frozen fast to the floor.
Oh, no good. I have to get some help.
He tried the telephone, but the dial wouldn't turn. The instrument was frozen solid. He staggered from the laboratory, raced down the passage into my study, and dialed 999. Some hours later, in the quiet of a hospital ward, Clifford, McLaren, and myself stood at the bedside of a white-faced, shaken, but still living Elizabeth, waiting till she could tell us her story.
Hi, Liz.
Hello, Cliff.
You should have stayed for that other coffee. How are you feeling?
Cold. Still very cold. Sorry to be such a nuisance, Doctor.
Oh, my dear child.
I shouldn't have gone back.
Oh, you weren't to know. Now, don't talk if you don't want to, my dear.
I do want to, but...
Well, can you tell us what happened?
It was so cold. Ice was just growing on everything. I knew I had to telephone. I tried to remember the coffee bar number. Did I?
Sure you did. You got through. When I arrived up there, the whole darn place was turning into a glacier.
But before that, Miss Ryder, how did it begin? Why did you want to telephone? Why did you not just come out?
I don't know. I was leaving when it started. I remember seeing my own shadow on the wall. Then the noise. That awful noise. I couldn't think. Because of... the other sounds.
What other sounds?
Strange sounds. I couldn't understand them.
Elizabeth, try to remember.
I can't. My mind wouldn't work.
Elizabeth, what other sounds did you hear? You must tell me.
Like voices. Quiet, gentle voices. Whispering. I tried to understand them. They wanted to be understood. And I knew I could if only... But it was so cold.
Go on, go on.
I wanted to go nearer, to hear them better.
Nearer? To the cubicle?
Yes. They wanted me to. And I was talking. I remember now I kept on talking.
Yes.
I don't know what I said. I couldn't take my eyes off the rod. That green light. I wanted to be close to it. To be warm.
And then? Oh, Elizabeth, stay awake.
Sorry. Then I suddenly felt frightened.
Yes?
I knew I mustn't. I had to keep the voices out of my head. I just kept on thinking of the telephone. I thought, if I can just get to the telephone. It should have been black, but it had turned white. It hurt my hands.
Yes.
And then, oh, why can't they make this room warm?
He would leave her alone.
Yes, I can now. Thank you, my dear. Have a good rest. You've more than earned it. I think we should go now.
So long, Liz. The doctor says you should be fit enough to come out tomorrow.
Thanks, Kev. I keep on getting rescued by you. I mustn't let it become a habit.
She's almost asleep. Come along.
We went back to the college, to the laboratory. The ice had all disappeared, but the place looked as if a flood had swept through it. It was late. We were all exhausted. There seemed nothing more we could do. We stood there aimlessly, helplessly, while the water dripped dismally around us.
Well, I don't know. Voices whispering, wanting to be understood. Doctor, was she just a bit light-headed, or did she really hear something?
Yes, Clifford, I believe she did. That was why she stayed. She had to.
Heywood, are you telling us that that object spoke? That a voice came from it?
Not a voice, but something that was able to reach her mind, that wanted to communicate with it.
Aye, and the signals reaching the telescope. Again, an attempt at communication.
Exactly.
It must fit together. Two forms, perhaps, of the same thing.
Hey, Doctor, look at this.
What is it?
The tape recorder. It's running.
And the tape half-used.
It switched to record. It wasn't operating when I bust in here, but it is now.
And the microphone is still connected. Clifford, you said Elizabeth fell about here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, suppose she stumbled against it, pressed her hand down on it.
And switched it on. It would have started recording.
Yes.
And gone on until the cold froze the motor to a standstill.
And it's only just thawed and started up again. Clifford, take the tape off. I have a recorder at home. We can try it there. This place is still uncomfortably chilly. And before we go, make quite certain the cubicle is properly secured. After this, no one is to be alone in here, not for 1 minute.
I've got the tape laced up, sir.
Let's hear it, then. Though I doubt if it picked up much under those conditions.
Here she goes, then.
Nothing.
Well, it has to warm up.
Ah, listen.
Hey, that's it. The rod going flat out. She did start it going.
Shh.
Seen it so often. Phone number on the menus. Think.
She was trying to get me at the coffee bar.
One.
I was sitting down there feeling so sorry for myself. If I'd have known what you were.
Cliff,
please come. Please. I can't fight it much longer. Yes. Cliff, help me. I mustn't go back.
Drop the receiver.
Yes. Now, those vital 4 minutes before you got to the laboratory. If we can hear what happened in that time, though we must.
Hey, listen to that. It never made that noise before.
Now she's walking towards it, getting near the cubicle.
Are you? Yes, I can hear, but you are so far away. I will try to understand. The cylinders come from your world.
Many were lost on the journey, but many have landed safely. Yes. We are in no danger. No danger. You intend us no harm. Yes. The cylinders are your way of exploring our planet, which you believe may be inhabited. Yes. They collect samples, solids and gases. Transmit them back for analysis. Yes? In this way, you are surveying our world without leaving your own. To you, space and time are not impassable barriers.
Hey, what? Do you hear? This is weight.
Now you are trying to communicate with us directly. Yes. If we are intelligent beings, we are to answer. Yes. Yes, we do understand. But how are we to answer? It is so cold. Yes, I am trying. Yes, there may be another way. We are not to be afraid if you take the next step. If you use the rods to... What?
Oh. And that's all we shall hear, I suppose. That was when the recorder finally froze up and stopped. It's a wonder it kept going as long as it did.
Well, Hayward, you were right. Voices from the 10th planet.
Yes. An inhabited planet, Campbell. Though by what inconceivable form of life?
Aye, what?
So that is the purpose of the cylinders. What incredible technology. No clumsy rockets, no feeble attempts to land on a planet where conditions might be dangerous to them. No. First, a systematic, remote-controlled survey. 50 years. By now, they must have built up a complete knowledge of the Earth's composition. Its geology, its atmosphere, its lands, its oceans. And we fondly imagine that we are far advanced in science.
Well, at least one weight's off our minds. They're not hostile.
No.
They're still only seeking knowledge. Thank heaven there's no danger after all.
No, no danger. They seem anxious to reassure us on that.
Obviously, they have no way of coming here, even if they wanted to. That distance, it's out of the question.
Well, that may be just as well. What manner of creatures can exist there? A frozen planet 100 times the size of Earth, 5,000 million miles away. It could be no biochemical life as we understand it.
Yeah, but what's that they said? Time and space are not impassable barriers. They said that.
Quite so.
Well, you must act on this as you think best. I must get back. I've been too long away from the telescope already. When I left, young Garrick was working like a maniac.
On the signals, you mean?
Yes. He's pretty sure the breakthrough isn't far off now.
Well, we must know if they're part of the same project. We can suppose now that they are. But it's strange that they were not mentioned in the message that Elizabeth understood.
Aye, that's odd. But once we can find the basic key to those transmissions, we'll know.
And I must see Lord Heatherton again tomorrow. He must hear this recording. Perhaps there is no real urgency now if one keeps a safe distance from the cylinders, but all the same...
There's just one thing on my mind, sir.
What's that?
We didn't get the end of that message. The tape stopped too soon.
It did.
Liz did, but she can't remember.
No.
We were not to be afraid if they used the rods to take the next step. Now, that's what gets me. What else could they be used for? What next step?
The next day was sunny, and I felt easier in my mind than I had for a long while. But a shadowy doubt still lurked. We had made a momentous discovery. We seemed, at last, to have reached the truth. Then, why did I feel that the pieces had dropped into place too conveniently? Was there still something we had overlooked? I was just leaving for Whitehall when Tom Lambert arrived. He had been busy since I last saw him, and he wasted no time. He slapped a thick sheaf of papers on my desk. The neat teleprinter type, page after page of it,
told a disturbing story.
Here's the first installment, Doctor, straight off the wires. They're coming in thick and fast. The ministry teamed up with the Foreign Office. They've got every foreign news service working overtime.
And these are all accounts of the same kind of phenomena?
Yeah, dug out of newspaper files all over the known world. And like ours, they go back for 50 years and more.
Well, let's have a look. Yes, everywhere. Australia, Alaska, Norway, South America.
Yeah.
Even one from the Philippines.
And in every case, the same symptoms. Earth tremors, vibration, violent drops in temperature. In a few places, the things were seen to land.
Where there?
A streak of blue-white light, a quick concussion, and then just a small hole in the ground.
Well, they would arrive white-hot after passing through the atmosphere.
In many cases, they were assumed to be meteorites. But they go down so deep, they're impossible to dig out.
Well, they must strike the Earth at tremendous speed.
I'll say.
The one we found under that beach must somehow have been slowed down, perhaps through colliding with a real meteor shower.
Hmm.
And how many of these are there?
Well, so far, 208.
208?
And the reports are still coming in.
Oh, the minister must see these too. Distributed over the entire surface of the globe. So many. Just for a survey.
What was that, Doctor?
Oh, I was just thinking aloud.
Oh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lambert. By the way, we've come to the conclusion that there's no serious danger from these things.
Oh?
Provided they're kept at a respectful distance.
Well, let's hope you're right, Doctor, because I've got a news flash, too. Our South Wales correspondent tells me that troops have moved in.
Moved in where?
Llanwethlyn.
Good heavens.
Yeah, they're mounting a guard on the old pit. Seems the official view is a little less confident than yours.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I must be going. I'll pass on anything I can.
Well, thanks, Doctor. I'll be around. I have a small theory of my own. I think we may be comparing notes again before long.
Half an hour later, I was again in that quiet, high room behind Whitehall. Lord Heatherton's face was more serious than it had been before. He listened to the tape recording and examined the bundle of reports.
Well, this is really only what we expected, isn't it, Doctor? Except bigger. Over 200 cylinders.
So many and so evenly distributed.
No country, no corner of the world overlooked. Rather like some enormous spy system. As you say, why should they need so many? And that recording. We are dealing with something quite outside our knowledge. But if their intentions really are peaceful, is there any way we can reply?
Well, according to Professor McCallum, none at present. In time, a signaling apparatus might be built, and it might be powerful enough to send short waves to the 10th planet.
A lot of mites, Doctor.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Anyway, I'll tell you what we are doing about this. Plotting every suspected site in this country, guarding each one we confirm with an army unit.
Yes, I heard.
The public must be protected. Our delegate is addressing the United Nations Scientific Commission today. Then I hope the same will happen abroad. Detecting, plotting, and observation of sites. And here in this red folder, there's another scheme I've drawn up.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you the details yet, but they are also being put before the commission.
What sort of scheme?
Just certain emergency measures, should they for any reason become necessary.
Yes, but
I know what you're going to say. This is knowledge, vital knowledge. We must be on our guard against any instinctive hostility, I agree. But better safe than sorry, Doctor.
I see. But what do we do immediately?
A famous politician once said a famous saying, wait and see. Carry on with your work for another week. If no new developments occur, then I shall arrange for several other cylinders to be excavated.
And then?
Already there are some high-level proposals, an international authority to decide how best to develop this interplanetary contact. Research centers will be needed, an international fund, coordination.
Yes, of course. Another week. Then it'll be out of my hands.
Not entirely. There will be work as part of a team for all the specialists we have. Your lecturing on cosmic science will be valuable.
My lecturing?
This is a big event in the history of our small world, Doctor. We must be big enough, each in our own way, to meet it.
Yes, I understand.
Now, perhaps you'll excuse me. I have rather a lot to do. I have to report to Parliament this afternoon. But I rather think all the honorable members will stay awake to listen to me today.
Outside, Whitehall was gray and cold. The sun had gone. A steady drizzle was falling. The cars and buses elbowed each other. The passers-by huddled into their coats and went on their million and one different errands. Everything was as it should be on a dismal November London afternoon. So solid, so normal. What, I found myself saying, can possibly change any of this? The few slabs of colored plastic we were making such to-do about, it suddenly seemed absurd. Oh, how little we knew then. I drove back to the college. I went up to the laboratory and stood looking at the rod, dark and silent in the cubicle. Would we ever know? And anyway, in a few days it would be taken away. I hardly heard the doors open behind me.
We thought you might be here. Hello, Doctor.
Hello, Doctor. Elizabeth, Clifford.
Oh, I was daydreaming. How are you, my dear?
Quite all right now.
Good.
They let me out this morning. Cliff told me about the recording I seem to have made. I still don't remember. He didn't want me to come here again, but I wanted to see that. He told me something, more than was on the tape, and I repeated it. But it's gone.
Well, it may come back to you. In any case, our work's nearly over. Special authorities, international funds, there'll be no place for us. Oh, well, it had to happen. What I can possibly do in 1 week,
I think. I could try again. I think I can stand it.
No, I won't hear of it. You've done your share, Elizabeth. Another time, that terrible freezing, you might not be so lucky. Now we can only wait. The next morning, Saturday, the newspapers exploded. Theories, speculations, accusations, advice. Plenty of advice. The story had broken at last. By 11, my house was besieged by reporters. Every reporter in London, it seemed, except Tom Lambert. My front doorbell and telephone rang furiously until I disconnected them both. I saw no one all day and I spoke to no one. I slept badly that night. I kept hearing the sound of the cylinder. And once, I think it was 3 a.m, I got up and rang the college. But the disgruntled voice of Simmons assured me that all was quiet in the laboratory. The next day was the same. Now the tireless gentleman of the press resorted to the door knocker. I couldn't do much about that. Then 3 solid policemen appeared outside and peace returned. Late in the afternoon, Clifford and Elizabeth called. I was glad to see them and asked them to stay for dinner. It was a silent meal. The wind seemed very strong outside, rattling the windows behind the curtains and scurrying round the deserted square. We were not to know it then, but elsewhere the night was even wilder. Far away, a bitter gale was lashing the Isle of Scara and howling through the girders of the radio telescope high above Kirkcaldy.
Sure about this? You can't have made a mistake.
I broke the code this afternoon. Stumbled on it almost by accident. Once I confirmed the 10 basic groups, the rest just fell into place. I got this clear transcription from the first long sequence I tried.
But it's English.
Oh, it is now. But it could be any language. The signals don't convey a letter alphabet. They're a series of numerical progressions representing shades of meaning. A sort of mathematical grammar.
And this is what you've translated so far?
I'll work through the rest as fast as I can.
This is enough. Goodness gracious, Peter. If this is true, I must talk to Petrie. He must know about this at once.
We were sitting round the fire when the telephone rang. At first we ignored it, but it wouldn't stop. At last I asked Clifford to answer it.
Yeah? Yes, he's here. Hold on, will you? Doctor, it's Professor McLaren calling from Scarra.
Oh, I wouldn't like his phone bill. Hello, Campbell.
He what?
Yes.
He what? Garrick has broken the signal code.
What? When?
A few hours ago. He's translated a passage, I've got the paper here.
What? What does it say?
I'd better read it. It's short enough. Are you listening?
Yes, yes.
If the cylinders speak, do not believe what they say. Your planet is in great danger. Destroy them.
Good heavens.
That's repeated three times. Then, when the great cold comes, it will be too late.
The great cold? Is that all?
Aye. Garrick's at work on the rest. I'll be down tomorrow, Hayward. I'll get a plane.
Good.
Let's hope it isn't as bad as I think it is.
Yes. Well, thank you, Campbell. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, did you hear that, Clifford? If the cylinders speak, do not believe them.
And all that about peaceful intentions and seeking knowledge.
Well, it's to throw us off our guard, to save the cylinders. Perhaps so that... Oh, what a monumental idiot I've been. The 10th planet, in some way, it must be divided. That's why signals have been coming from two directions. And if the cylinders transmit matter, well, of course, we must go to the laboratory. There's no knowing how much time we have. It's only waiting. Don't you see, either of you? This marvel of creation we've come close to worshipping, it can beam matter across space. We've known that for weeks, but we've been blind. If it can transmit in one direction, it can do it in the other. From Earth to the 10th orbit.
Oh, from there to here.
Precisely.
But what would they need to send through?
Themselves. Whatever they are, themselves. We've heard their voices. Next time, we shall see them.
But the next step, we were not to be afraid. We were to wait to help them.
Doctor, look. The rod. It's starting to flicker. Oh. The green light. It's beginning. It must be. And the cold. Can you feel it?
Well, we must choose now. Knowledge or survival. Clifford,
yeah?
The builders left a sledgehammer in the passage. Get it. Get it, I said.
Okay.
What are you going to do?
Do what primitive man did when he saw danger. Fight.
Here it is.
Some hammer. Must weigh 30 pounds.
Elizabeth, open the cabinet.
Open.
Do as I say quickly.
All right.
Now, tip the rod over. Pull it. It won't hurt you yet. I'll help you.
All right.
Right. There it is, Clifford. Now, use those Canadian muscles of yours. Smash it.
Yeah, but we can't just
smash it. I tell you, if you won't, I shall have to.
Okay.
Stand back. Here it goes, then. It won't break.
Harder. Harder. All your strength, Clifford. It must break. It must.
Oh, it's hopeless. Won't even
hear. The ice! Look! The ice! It's coming!
It's no good. They knew it would come to this. They planned. They made sure. Nothing can destroy this thing. Nothing!
That was Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes written by Peter Elliott Hayes and produced for the BBC by David Davis.